2022, as of calling the meeting to order. Roll call basically was done there by Heather, so we'll be waiting on Seamus. Does anybody have any declarations of conflicts of interest on any agenda item? Hearing none, we'll move on. So we'll go here to four to the review on our previous meeting, general session minutes from August the 10th, 2022. Does anybody have any additions to the minutes? Hearing none, I will go ahead and make a motion to accept minutes from the general session of August 10, 2022, as written. Thank you, Dr. Foreman. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? So moved. Let's move then down to our item five, subheading B, issuance of licenses. We have Dr. Rachel Yanovich, who inadvertently missed her deadline, and she went through the reapplication process. Everything is in place in her application. Fees have been paid, correct, Heather? So does anybody have any questions or concerns on that application? Hearing none, I'm going to go ahead and make a motion to accept the application. This would be considered an initial application for licensure and to issue the license upon payment of a license issuance fee. Thank you, Dr. Foreman. Any discussion on that? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? So moved. Okay, now we'll go on to C, which has to do with our renewal applications, and Dr. Dela Cruz would be calling in about 9, so we'll have to go back to him, but we can go ahead and take the issue here for Dr. Cameron McKay. And Dr. McKay is asking for he's teaching in China at a medical school in China, so seeing that he fits the statutory guideline for having a waiver for his continuing education, that's what he has requested, and that regards ARS 32-829C. He's paid his licensing, or he's paid his fees, and everything on his application is current and up to date. So does anyone have any questions or concerns on Dr. McKay? Hearing none, then I will go ahead and make a motion to grant the CME waiver to Dr. McKay, as he is absent from the United States. That is part of ARS 32-829C. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? So moved. And then do we also need to accept the application? Pardon?
If you didn't make a motion to approve the renewal, then yes, I would.
Okay, we'll
ask.
Okay, we'll do it separate then. Okay, so then everybody has reviewed Dr. McKay's application for relicensing. Any questions or concerns on that application? Hearing none, then I will make a motion to accept Dr. McKay's application for relicensure as it is statutorily complete. And it has been paid. Thank you, Dr. Foreman. Any discussion on Dr. McKay's second motion? Hearing none, we'll take our vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? So moved. Actually, I can give you some of my reports as they're not too appealing. Give me a second.
Hi, this is Heather Bottas in the board office. Can I ask who just joined the call?
Yeah, hello, Chair. I apologize. I was sitting on the e-section.
Hi, Seamus.
I was in the executive session on purpose on accident, so I'm here.
No worries. Thank you.
Dr. Spector? Oh, okay. Okay. Well, I'm going to go ahead and, for in the essence of time matters here, I'm going to go down to number six. This is just a quick report from the National Board of Podiatric Medical Examiners. I sit as a trustee as my from the Federation of Podiatric Medical Boards. Anyway, we had a meeting in August, and just wanted to give you an update from our general public session that we're still in progress with developing a new format for the CSP. We already have a lot of components that are already in place, but we're just looking at different options as how we're going to implement that. We work with the National Board of Osteopathic Medical Examiners, and they currently have been using, they still believe, as the National Board of Podiatric Medicine believes, that the clinical skills examination is a very important examination to be doing, particularly because a lot of us that sit on the board are also members of our state boards and find that most of the complaints generated are having to do with poor communication skills, documentation skills, and examination skills. So anyway, the DOs, they're currently in their medical school, and their schools are using, the deans do an attestation of the skills of the students. So again, like I said, we've been working with them to try to come up with a new format that we can use to continue having an examination. But one of the most interesting points that was brought up, we had a gentleman, a Dr. John Gimple, that's the CEO and president of NBOME, get up and talk, and he said a lot of this is coming out in the allopathic schools, that their feeling there is that they want to stop teaching students how to perform physical examinations. They don't need to. They don't feel they need to teach them about doctor-patient relationships or about communication skills, which is just, to me, it's unheard of. It's so, again, going back to the fact that both organizations feel strongly that in some form or another, we still need to be testing the clinical skills. So, let's see if there's anything else that came from that I wanted to let you know about. Anyway, so, and again, remember, our statute is very broad as far as taking exams. We don't delineate the CSPE exam out, so we're just covered very broadly, which is really nice, because it just says you have to pass a national exam. So that works out really well for us. So anybody have any questions or comments on my report there? The other one is the next one, which is seven, and that was, there was recently, the APMA has an advocacy forum, and they were only doing the meeting every 2 years, and they would do it live, and so a lot of people were wanting to have it be yearly, so this year they added a virtual meeting, and I gave a presentation on for this advocacy forum, which was on the 20th of August. Anyway, my topic was about how the legislative process works. So I just presented, you know, I gave them the setup of how things are structured in Arizona with our, you know, with how our political system works and how rules or how legislative process goes. And I discussed and rule process. So I gave them, you know, just kind of a rundown on what we went through with our latest, you know, legislation that we had passed that is now waiting in rule. Anyway, so if you have, you know, you can, because being a member of APMA, you can go on their website and you can look at, they have breakout sessions and all this and different speakers. Anyway, you can go on there if you're so interested to look and see, you know, what all was discussed at this meeting. It's, you know, it's the www.apma.org/SAF2022. So that ends my report on that. Where are we? Did Dr. Steck get to us now?
Yes, he should be joining in just a few minutes.
Okay, great. because we can do number 9, which is our summary of current events. Is there any current events to summarize? No? Okay. All right. Gentlemen, we have our next board meeting is scheduled for October 25 of 22, and that's going to be in Boardroom 8. And that's the room we had such terrible time with the technology and hearing, et cetera. The next meeting is November 9th, which is only 2 weeks away from that. And Heather, currently I believe we have 4 investigation files. Is that correct, Heather?
I have 3 that I can schedule for either meeting. I'm hoping to be able to schedule one other one for one of those meetings.
So an option we have, I know we spent a lot of time trying to figure out a date that worked for us in October, that one of the possibilities that we do have is if you are in favor of this, if it can work with your schedule, to not have an October meeting and just move everything to the November meeting, because there's only 2 weeks in between, and if something would happen at the October 25th meeting that we needed to have proper notice to carry it on to November, we wouldn't have that proper notice time. So if... Do any of you have any concerns about your availability?
I'm going to
Hi, Dr. Yolanda, this is Heather. That was very muffled, but it sounded like you do not have an issue with not having a meeting in October. Is that correct?
Correct.
Thank you.
That's correct.
Thank you.
Dr. Foreman, how is that for you? Okay. Okay, so we'll do that. We'll since we're all in agreement, we will not have our meeting in October, but have it all be at the November meeting. And we will
turn our cases up.
Pardon me?
So our 4 cases on November 9th meeting.
Yes, November 9th is that date. And we'll be in our regular room here. All righty. So is Dr. Stecknell on the line with us? Sorry for jumping all over creation here, but...
Sorry for the delay.
Oh, no. Okay. Good morning, Dr. Steck. Okay. So we are down here on our complaints, which is under item 5, subheading A, investigation files. And the complaint is 2022-3, which is Dr. Dershowitz. And we've all had this case for a very long time here. And so I would just ask Dr. Steck, if you could just give a very brief review, just to remind board members of the situation that what this is all regarding.
Suspected an injury patient went to Washington to see him have a line of graft.
I apologize for interrupting. It's very muffled, so I don't know if you have this on speaker. If you could take us off of speaker, or if you do not have us on speaker, maybe try using speaker, because it sounds like you're going in and out, and it's really hard to hear a lot of what you're saying. I apologize.
Okay, thank you for coming in. Is that any better?
No.
I'm going to wait for this.
I'm going to have to change in just a second to our speaker.
Okay, thank you. Maybe if there's a landline that you could call in on?
This is a hospital landline, so
okay.
I can try my cell phone, and let me call from a different phone.
I apologize. Maybe it just sounds like you're holding the phone very close to you.
Okay.
A little bit of speaker,
A little bit. It's, we can, I can make out what you're saying, but it's still a little muffled.
Okay, so, you need to still use a pet test. Is this any better or worse?
That's better. Thank you.
That's better?
Yes, thank you.
Okay. All right, so this takes me to the young man that had a self-target cell implant, and had a suspected nerve injury, taken to a specialty, moved back east, and went to a specialty nerve clinic and had a nerve graft done. Had some improvement, but not a great deal. We tabled the case last time because we did not have the complete records from a Dr. Firestone, a podiatrist that did another procedure also back east, and we tried to get these records, but were unable to obtain the records, and we did get additional physical therapy records, which I didn't believe were significantly helpful in the case, but overall, in the meantime, Dr. Dershowitz has retired and is no longer practicing, and after a review of everything that he could, the initial case, and the inability to get additional records from the other podiatrist, my recommendation was that the case be dismissed, as the main complaint from the complainant was that they didn't want this to happen to other people, and given his retirement, that won't happen if he won't be performing surgery. So that was, pretty much all what I came up with over the last few months as we've tabled the case.
Thank you very much, Dr. Steck. Does anyone have any questions for Dr. Steck at this time? And we don't have, Dr. Dershowitz is not present either, as his counsel, Kimberly Kent, and of course the complainant's parents are not present. Do you all have any questions? Well, I'd like to make some comments. Okay, as we've all said, we've had this case for a really long time. And again, as Dr. Steck indicated, this was had to do with the Taylor joint arthrolesis and gastric recession surgery. And obviously, we've heard his report, and we've had multiple responses from Dr. Dershowitz through his attorney. And I know initially Dr. Steck substantiated the allegations and now is recommending to dismiss the case because of the reasons he stated. I still am firmly in agreement that all the allegations should be substantiated. And again, we've had the comment from the parents that they don't want this to happen to anyone else. And again, having the issues with securing proper medical records, and I do agree that the physical therapy records were not very helpful, but it still showed that at the time that the patient was discharged to going back to D.C. after the last scene of physical therapy from October 26th of 18 through May 25th of 19, and he indicated he was about 80% better, but he was still limited in the left ankle with he was restricted, and he was very apprehensive with his gait, and there were some other issues, plus he'd had the other foot done. So, but I do agree, and looking at Dr. Dukic, his report, the nerve doctor back there in Washington, D.C., we have documentation in the pathology report and in the operative report about the damage and trauma that happened to the nerves. Also have the EMG, nerve conduction studies, and that's found on page 224 of your packet, and the EMG study to the pathology report from the surgery. The notice is the scarring of the lateral palmar nerve at the level of the surgery. There was also a modular structure that could be nearly proximate to the Mastronata Henry that was either scar or nerve, and she indicated that the tibial nerve was normal at the gastroc surgery location. So the EMG study indicated that there was that TTN neuropathy at the level of the tarsal tunnel, greater involvement of the medial plantar branch as compared to the left plantar branch. Anyway, and there wasn't any evidence that the nerve had re-innervated at that time. So page 320 has Dr. Busick's operative report, and there's on page 322 in the third paragraph, it says, and this is just very brief from it, that this allowed, the dissection allowed known to unknown principal dissection, ultimately confirming that the lateral plantar nerve was in fact injured, proximal and distal ends were separated and, in quotation marks, held together only by a scar. So, again, my comments about the physical therapist was, you know, that there was some help, but he was still not at 100%. So, yes, Dr. Dershowitz retired in January 2020 and didn't complete a licensure at reapplication process. But to me, if retirement of a physician doesn't negate the facts that we have feel that the allegations are substantiated. So we've reviewed everything, and I believe there's strong evidence that the patient was injured and that he subsequently failed to recognize and treat an operative, post-operative complication. So we have three options, in my opinion. We can dismiss the case without prejudice, so that we can always reopen the complaint and investigation if Dr. Dershowitz would decide to return to practice. Number two, if he would return to practice, we could go through his application process and could restrict his license or place him on probation. And number three option is to offer a consent agreement, which he promises not to reapply. And this is considered a disciplinary action. So I am definitely most inclined to select the first option, which is to dismiss without prejudice. Do you all have any? Now, Seamus is here, so he couldn't make comment on that unless we go into executive session.
Dr. Campbell, can you hear me?
Yeah, you're kind of muffly there, Seamus.
You know, I was just going to say, everybody on the phone is very clear, except we are very muffled to you, so I think there's a problem with the phone system.
See, it's only, to us it's muffled, to them only can hear the mic.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Seamus, this is Heather. It sounded like what you said was that you agree with the options that Dr. Campbell provided.
Yes, can you hear me better now?
So, Dr. Foreman, Dr. Ilano, do you have any comments or questions or concerns on those options and your opinion?
Okay.
So it sounds like we're all in agreement. So I'm going to go ahead and make a motion here to dismiss case number 20-22-C for Dr. Michael Dershowitz without prejudice. Any other further discussion on that? Hearing none, let's take our vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? So moved. Thank you, gentlemen. All right. We'll move on to case 21-26-B, which is Dr. Chad Thompson. And Dr. Farhani is our investigator, and Dr. Thompson is the president of the council. William Souders. So, and of course, we don't have a complainant in this case, as it is a board complaint, so we would be considered the complainant. So I will ask Dr. Farhani to summarize his very detailed and thorough report.
Good morning, everybody. This is Dr. Farhani. I'm an investigator on file complaint 21-26-B against Dr. Chad Thompson, licensee 000578. My investigation was done on 8-6-2022. I'll try to be as brief and not redundant. This is the summary of allegations. In reviewing the records, Ms. G was involved in a severe motor vehicle accident on 5-28-2018, which resulted in a mislead injury of the right foot. She was originally treated at the emergency department at St. Joe's Westgate Medical Center. A closed reduction internal fixation was attempted but failed. Ms. G was subsequently transferred over to the St. Joe's Hospital, where an ortho consult was obtained by Dr. Navid Ziran. Percutaneously pinned fracture. At this point, stage procedure was discussed with the patient. Patient underwent two procedures by Dr. Thompson. First ORIF performed took place on 6-14 of 2018, and the other one 8-2 of 2018, which the initial hardware was removed and replaced by a tightrope to reproduce the misfed ligament. Sadly, on 2-2-2021, the patient underwent BKA below the knee amputation. The nature of such allegations against Dr. Thompson are as followed. The patient presented to the DPM 3 weeks after suffering a Lisfranc injury to the right foot in a motor vehicle accident on 5-28-2018. 7 weeks later, Dr. Thompson removed the internal fixation and replaced with a suture button. The patient alleged that Dr. Thompson removed the internal fixation too early following surgery, resulting in dislocation and the need for additional surgeries, including the amputation of the foot slash extremity. The case was settled on 4-5-2022 for alleged negligence in removing internal fixation too soon following surgery and eventually causing an amputation. The licensee provided the board with a written response to allegations through his counsel, Mr. Souders. For redundancy purposes, I think board members have already reviewed that letter. Medical records review, I'll start by 5-28-2018, the motor vehicle accident. There was a closed reduction of right Lisfranc joint. It was attempted but was not sufficient. Ms. G was subsequently transferred to St. Joe's Hospital, where Dr. Navid Ziran, an orthopedic surgeon, closed, reduced, and pinned her fracture. Unfortunately, anatomic reduction was not restored based on the records that I reviewed. On 6-12, which is approximately 13-14 days after, the initial visit was with Dr. Thompson. On 6-14-2018, first surgery was done, underwent an open reduction internal fixation of a 3-week-old right Lisfranc fracture. Dr. Thompson performed the procedure with assistance of Dr. Nathan Jepson. They removed the previous fixation and were able to get almost near anatomic reduction. Postoperative x-ray was reviewed, and I feel that it was incorrect anatomic alignment. On 6-22-2018, 1 week status post Lisfranc joint fixation. She was doing well. X-rays showed anatomic reduction. The patient was instructed on a 9-week bearing status. On 6-29, which is 7 days later, 2 weeks status post-op. Patient was doing well and her sutures were removed without complication. She was instructed to remain completely non-weight bearing. She was to return to the clinic in 2 weeks for follow-up and additional x-rays of the right foot. 4 weeks post-op. At 4 weeks post-op, the patient was doing exceptionally well by history. She had a good range of motion and strength with minimal pain. A CAM walker was dispensed and the patient was told to remain non-weight bearing. At this visit, a procedure to remove the hardware and replace with a suture button was scheduled. On 8-2-2018, the second procedure was done. 7 weeks post-op, Dr. Thompson performed a second surgery on Ms. G, where he removed the internal fixation and placed a suture button. Bone anchor combination in other words, is a tightrope from the medial caniform into the second metatarsal. The patient left the operating room with anatomic reduction according to x-rays. On 8/10, there was a first follow-up to the second procedure. At this time, the patient was full weight-bearing and can walk. She claimed to have some discomfort, but generally was progressing well. Patient was casted for orthotics at this visit. On 8/24/2018, second follow-up visit, 3 weeks status post hardware removal and placement of the tightrope. By history, the patient informed Dr. Thompson that she had been seen in an urgent care for a few days prior with concerns of increased redness and pain in the right foot. Urgent care stated that she had an infection in the foot and placed her on an antibiotic regimen of Keflex 500 milligrams. By the time of her office visit with Dr. Thompson, her symptoms appeared to have been improving. By record, the incision site was well healed. There was evidence of some buried stitches, but no sound dehiscence. On 9/14/2018, third follow-up visit, 5 weeks to status post hardware removal and placement of the tightrope. Ms. G reported that she had pain in the right foot, especially in the morning when she woke up. However, when she transitioned into shoes with orthotic inserts, pain subsided. Of note, the patient was able to walk in regular shoe gear. At this time, patient was informed that it could take several months to a year postoperatively to heal completely. She was told she needed to continue to wear shoe gear with orthotics and follow up in 1 month and a half. On 10/31/2018, Ms. G had complaints of increased pain in the right foot, especially in the ball of her foot and the heel. By record, her incisions were all healed up at this time. She was informed that postoperative pain was normal and to be expected. She was told to continue to wear shoe gear with orthotics and was instructed to follow up in another month and a half. A CT scan of her right foot was ordered for the further evaluation of Dr. Thompson's CT scan, and at that time they noted that there was some degenerative changes with dislocation. We referred patient to God rest her soul, Dr. Aparjit Nakra, for further surgical intervention. At this time, there was a new practitioner that was assigned to the patient at patient's will. The care was transferred to Dr. Nicholas Wishmeyer at the Core Institute. The patient underwent several large reconstructive procedures. The foot maintained an abducted position despite these surgeries. The foot would not heal and maintain a significantly abducted position. Dr. Wishmeyer moved from our state, and patient followed with his associate, Dr. Mark Campbell. Dr. Campbell noted the failed procedures the patient had undergone and ultimately recommended an amputation. On 2/1/2021, third procedure slash surgery, the patient would undergo surgery for the right below the knee amputation. The hospital records were reviewed. I do not see records of her postoperative follow-up. There are some physical therapy records that were mentioned. Photographs of the amputation site noted post-op blistering of the stump with staples secured. No follow-up photo noted on records of use of prosthesis. No note noted by Dr. Campbell of such appointments for the prosthesis. My conclusion. I do not believe that the allegations from the complaint are substantiated for neglect. I believe that Dr. Thompson was one out of the six people who had contact with this patient surgically and conservatively. I think this case would have expected to have an unfavorable outcome from the first procedure of percutaneous pinning post-accident prior to seeing Dr. Thompson. I strongly believe that the patient suffers or suffered from peripheral neuropathy as a result of the motor vehicle accident or prior to the motor vehicle accident. I am unable to validate a understanding if the patient was immunocompromised in any way, shape, or form, or whether she was evaluated for it previously. I can tell you that I would recommend and certainly work up the patient with an appropriate blood work, NCV, EMG testings. I would very well have concluded that this patient may have been neuropathic, may have been unknown, may have been untested, and developed a Charcot secondary to the neuropathy, microfracture, the microtrauma, undergoing the one close percutaneous, two open surgical intervention. Reviewed imaging post-procedures with and without heartburn, the foot held anatomical alignment, and reduction yet failed with five procedures. So with the work that Dr. Thompson did, I feel that his procedures held anatomical alignment, reviewing the x-rays. The process of severe pain in a sensate foot would have definitely triggered a communication to her doctor. However, in an insensate foot, all bets are off and totally different paradigm is used. I don't believe the removal of the initial internal fixation at 7 weeks really triggered this phenomenon. I firmly believe that her right foot would have progressed unfavorably regardless of the events that took place in the above. This is a prime example and sequela of the neuropathy. The rapid rate of destructive confirms such state. However, not seeking medical treatment sooner, I believe that the patient had a huge role in the grand scheme of things. I just don't agree nor believe that Dr. Thompson treated this patient any way below the standard of care, so I find these allegations unsubstantiated.
Thank you very much for that report, Dr. Farhani. The only question I have or is a comment, I didn't see any evidence in the chart being any other traumatic events post-surgically.
Yes.
All the surgeries. So I just want to make sure I did not see any. Dr. Foreman or Dr. Yolanda, do you have any questions for Dr. Farhani?
No, thank you for the questions. Thank you, Dr. Farhani. I have no questions for you.
Thank you very much, gentlemen. All right, so Dr. Thompson, thanks for coming down. And so do you want to give a summary, please? Do you have anything you'd like to say, if you want to make a summary of, or any other comments you want to add to the case? Have a didactic or just a little discussion. Just, I want your opinion. You know, she went on to a BKA. Do you think that in her instance that she could have been better served with maybe a transmit amp or a strength amputation so that she would have had, you know, better mechanical, I mean, because you know how it is with the BKA. I mean, it's going to stress her cardiovascular system. She's a big person to begin with. And just to hear a mere discussion on your opinion as to, do you think she would have been better off? Because I know, you know, a lot of orthopedic surgeons, that's the way they were trained. Well, we're just going to do an amputation of it.
No control.
Yeah. I understand. I just want, you know, from an academic point.
Right. Yeah, at that point, no control. But yeah, I think absolutely went better with a different amputation. The other physicians, other surgeons did all they could, but due to the Charcot, it changed.
Dr. Foreman or Dr. Yolanda, do you have any questions or comments for Dr. Thompson?
Dr. Foreman, no questions.
Thank you. Dr. Yolanda?
No questions. This is unfortunate.
I'm just going to make a few concluding remarks. just kind of want to wrap this up. So we know this case is one of those where you feel bad for everybody involved, and it's just, you hate to see things happen that really are beyond anybody's control. And again, there were a lot of skilled doctors that were involved in the care of this patient, and they were doing their best. And of course, you know, when there's litigation, you've got experts on both sides. And we can certainly appreciate academic discussions, but I think it comes down to the fact that, you know, you're going to agree to disagree on the care that was given to the patient. And nobody that was there as an expert was there when the patient was being taken care of. So they're just reading, they're not there. So and you know, again, the sheer element of the injury of the motor vehicle accident and the Lisfranc's fracture dislocation, even when you have successful reduction in healing, patients can develop traumatic arthritis, which we know, and that can require further surgery. And recently I was at a CME where there's no consensus within the orthopedic and the podiatric community as to should you do a primary arthrodesis or the ORAF. So again, you know.
This was not a
thing. Right, oh, exactly. Yeah. I know, what are you going to do? Exactly, yeah. And the fact, too, that with the removal of the ORF and putting in the tightrope is perfectly acceptable. That's what was stated. So again, and that was, I know, one of the points that what they argued. And again, in the literature and stuff, it's, you know, it's there. Also, you know, when you have a severe injury like that, there's always that chance of vascular embarrassment as well as injury to the nerve and the resultant development of the Charcot arthropathy. So I'm looking at this patient medically, too. You're obese. There could have been, like Dr. Farhani mentioned, that there could have been an undiagnosed diabetes. And the patient also had scoliosis. Nobody seemed to look at that. You know, so when you have scoliosis, who knows how severe that scoliosis was? There could have been a neuropathic element that came from that scoliosis. So again, all this with the severity of that injury, that it just made the snowball. And two, when the patient showed up in the ER and they said it was an infection, well, that could have been early Charcot that went on that, you know, because we all know what the signs and symptoms of that are. And the fact the patient was still on weight bearing, which was appropriate anyway, which he would have done in the Charcot at that point, so. Yeah, exactly. Right. So, and there's no, you know, as you mentioned, Dr. Farney, there's no evidence of any malicious intent on anyone's part or practice below the standard of care. It's just an unfortunate situation. And so I will make a motion to dismiss case 21-26B, seeing that there are no violations of state statute. Thanks, Dr. Foreman. Let's take our vote. All in favor? I'm sorry, I apologize. Any discussion? Sorry about that. Any discussion? Okay, we'll take our vote now. All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So moved. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Bye, Dr. Farhani.
Thank you.
All right. Is Dr. Developers on the phone?
Thanks.
Hi. Hi, I believe that somebody joined the call. Was it Dr. De La Cruz?
Okay, well, it's not a good thing. We can go ahead and just, it's not a good thing. Okay, so, gentlemen, let's go back to 5 subsection C for renewal application. Dr. Eugene De La Cruz, on my notes here, noted the malpractice case on the renewal application. Mm-hmm. He indicated that the malpractice case that is currently in litigation. Also, we have his renewal application also to vote on. He was incomplete on his opioid courses, but he did complete that, and his fees are contagious. Anybody have any questions on the application itself? And I'm going to go ahead and make a motion to accept Dr. Villacruz's renewal application. Application is any discussion? Any discussion? Any questions on that? Hearing none, let's take a vote on the application. All in favor? Oh, who seconded that? I'm sorry. Thank you, Dr. Foreman. Any discussion? All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So moved.
Hey, this is Heather in the board office. Did a participant just join the call?
All right, so now we have the other issue of the malpractice case, so I will go ahead then make a motion to open a board complaint regarding the malpractice case, CD 2022-00702, and to stay the complaint until litigation is completed. Thank you, Dr. Foreman. Any discussion on that motion? Take a vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? So moved. All right. So on to Heather's Executive Director's Report, number 8.
Thank you, Madam Chair, board members. So the renewal deadline has passed. We had about 440 licensees renew, and about 30 of those, and about 30 licensees that either retired or allowed their licenses to expire. The board's website did successfully migrate to the newest platform. There were certain documents and links that were not migrated over successfully. I have gone through pretty thoroughly and corrected everything that I found, but if there's anything that any board member finds, please let me know so I can correct the issue. As the board is aware, the statutory requirement to accept fingerprint clearance cards was September 1st of 2022, but the board cannot enforce that requirement without FBI approval. And again, it's unclear when the board will receive FBI approval. So in the meantime, I have put a notice on the website just stating that the board is not going to enforce that requirement due to needing approval from the FBI. So I'll keep the board apprised on that matter. I provided the FY24 budget submittal that was due on September 1st. I can answer any questions regarding that. And then there's been one new complaint since I sent out board materials. And that concludes my summary unless any board member has any questions for me.
I'm going back to this question. So, gentlemen, do you have any thing you'd like to see as a future agenda item?
Okay.
And I will make a call to the public, but we have no public here at this time. Everyone has vacated the room other than Heather and I. Okay, so our next board meeting, which we had discussed previous, that will be canceling our October 26th meeting, and our next board meeting then will be November the 9th, 2022, here in our regular boardroom meeting. Okay. Does anyone, is there any other item that you need to want to make any comments on or anything? So hearing none, I'm going to make a motion to adjourn the meeting at 9:20 a.m. on September 14, 2022. Mm-hmm. Dr. Foreman, any discussion? So moved. Thanks, Foreman.
Thank you.
Have a great day.
Us too. Feel better, Seamus.
Bye.